The Investing Show, brought to you in association with the Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust. For more information, please visit www.scottishmortgageit.com.
Welcome to The Investing Show, where we discuss ideas that matter to investors. I'm Simon Lambert of This Is Money. Joining me on the show, I've got John Forster of Impax Environmental Markets.
Hi.
And Richard Hunter of Interactive Investor.
Hi, Simon.
John, Impax Environmental Markets invests in a number of different fields, but these are the kind of things that really are how the world is changing, the future of the world. Can you tell us a little bit about where it invests, and also how did you get into investing in this area in the first place?
Right. Well, first of all, maybe to introduce myself. So I originally started work in the city in a generalist investment banking role, and I was doing management buyouts and acquisition finance over in Germany. And you probably know that Germany is probably at the forefront of environmental markets growth. So that was my first contact with these markets. I was a generalist at the time, really wanted to focus on something and become an expert. I saw it as an attractive growth opportunity. And I was also, if I may, you know, looking to do something where I felt maybe it was also making a bit of a contribution. So that's really the joy of it, is that it offers all of the above.
And within that environmental field that you have, there are a number of key areas. Can you tell us what they are?
Yes, so environmental markets is much broader, more diverse range of sectors than most people realise. We're investing in renewable energy, energy efficiency, water treatment and infrastructure, pollution control, waste management and recycling, and an area that we call sustainable food and agriculture. So broad range of sectors, not correlated with each other, so you don't all go up and down at the same time, and you know, a good balance of opportunities.
And I guess to many people watching the show, or many people who have read plenty of articles over the years about investing ethically, investing environmentally and things like that, they will think, oh, well, that's all very good, but there's no real money to be made in that, is there? Mm. Is that not the case?
We would strongly disagree with that, as you can imagine. You know, we would argue that environmental markets are a superior growth opportunity and that they're going to grow faster than the global economy. That's absolutely necessary in order to face some of the challenges that the global economy is facing. And it's also being delivered on the ground. So this isn't just a big story. We're actually seeing this earnings growth. And we've delivered something north of 5% per annum faster earnings growth compared to global equities. So it's a superior growth opportunity and an avenue for better performance, not worse. So the environmental benefit that the fund also delivers comes along for free. But the reason to be interested is definitely growth.
Yeah. Well, one of the things we're increasingly hearing about at the moment is ESG, environmental social governance. How does that dovetail with the environmental part that you're obviously expert in, or does it dovetail, or is it just a strand?
So the way we see ESG is it's an integral part of our investment process. So this is environmental, social and governance research. So every company that goes onto our buy list of eligible investments, we're looking at the environmental angle. Does it comply with all of the regulations? We're looking at the social side of things. You know, what's its attitude to trade unions and the relationships with its stakeholders? And we're looking at the governance, the board structures, remuneration, all of these things. And the way we think of it is that this is a really good way of identifying quality, because you know, a good company is good all the way through. And also, it helps us to manage some of the risks in the businesses we're investing in. So that's how we treat ESG.
Okay, great. So on the basis that's you know, that's kind of underpinning what you're looking for in the company, are you looking at early burners, low, you know, small companies with growth potential, or some of the obviously some pretty heavy hitting stocks that could also tick the ESG box?
Well, as I said at the start, I've been doing this for 18 years, and when we first started, it was definitely a feature of the universe that it was small, maybe 250 names, and a lot of them were unprofitable, and it was all quite speculative, quite early stage. But if we roll forward to today, it's a much more mature universe of companies. We've got 1,100 companies, $2.7 trillion of market cap, and they're much more established, proven, profitable, mainstream businesses. So, yeah, it's a really healthy environment for investing.
And once you've identified those businesses, how do you then decide which ones to invest in? Do you screen for certain things? Do you look particularly for value? Mm-hmm. Are you more concerned with the growth element?
So we've been doing this for a long time. We have this universe of 1,100 companies. When a company comes into the universe, it gets two analysts attached to it. So we're all constantly reviewing the list of stocks that we're responsible for and looking for how the businesses are developing, what the valuation looks like. We do have an algo, a kind of quant score that gives an arm's length assessment of quality of businesses and how that's changing. But more than anything, it's, you know, this is about bottom-up stock picking. This is the analyst team looking for the long-term winners in these markets and looking to kind of buy and hold them for the long term. So it's mainly that. We do have a couple of overlays, a macro view of the world, a subsector thematic piece which looks at what's going on in our markets, what's changing, and that's how it comes together in the portfolio.
And then presumably it involves going out, seeing these companies, finding out what they're doing, getting out there in the field, quite literally sometimes, I would imagine, to try and learn what's going on.
Yeah, that's right. You can't make the right decisions unless you're kind of meeting with management teams all the time, getting a proper update on what's going on in the business, their strategy, how the markets are unfolding. So we always meet every company in our universe and in our portfolios. And if it's in areas like Asia, which is a really interesting opportunity for us, then we're going to make sure that we're out on the ground and checking the quality of those assets. Because we have found some empty warehouses in our research trips.
So, yeah. So out of the 1,100 stocks that you're monitoring, how does the investment work in terms of how many of those stocks you're actually invested in at any given time?
It's a funnel.
Yep.
Fund manager has a funnel. So 1,100 companies at the top going through basic due diligence, detailed due diligence, followed by an investment committee. Which gets you onto what we call our A list of approved names for investment. That's 200 stocks. And then the portfolio construction is all about picking the best 55 to 65 stocks within that A list, but looking to have a balanced portfolio by sector, by region, you know, a balance of cyclical and defensive names, and just putting together a well-rounded portfolio. That's how we work it.
So, when I was looking into the trust, obviously a lot of the things that you're investing in are the kind of big picture things that we see every day in the newspaper, for example. Waste and recycling is a really big thing at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think people have been absolutely shocked to discover how little of the packaging that they get their food and items delivered in can actually be recycled. Holding up the tray that you get your meat in from the supermarket, going, well, why can't that be recycled?
Yeah.
Some of the companies that you're investing in are trying to deal with some of this problem, particularly around making it easier to recycle things. And one of the ones I noted was a company called Tomra. Is that correct?
That's absolutely right. So, you know, the waste and recycling area is experiencing, we believe, quite a serious disruptive event at the moment. And it's kind of what you've been alluding to, a combination of China instituting some import bans on contaminated recyclables, and this raised consumer awareness you're talking about how much of this plastic waste is ending up in the ocean, causing horrendous problems. So we've got to sort it out ourselves. The best way to get to high levels of recycling is deposit schemes. So when you buy a bottle of drink, you pay a deposit on that container, and then you post it back into what we call a reverse vending machine to reclaim your deposit. So Tomra is the market leader in that area. They have something like a 75% market share, dominant position, really well positioned for a rollout of deposit schemes into new markets, you know, such as Scotland, UK is considering it, France. You know, it's a huge opportunity.
And one of the other things that's never far away from us in the news, particularly if, like me, you also run the motoring section,
yeah,
is electric cars. There's a lot of questions around electric cars. They range from range, for example, to the battery technology. One of the companies you're invested in, Umicore, does something to do with the battery technology, doesn't it?
It does. So might be worth just taking a step back and explaining our perspective on electric vehicles. Is we do believe in a very strong growth story for this category, from less than 1% penetration last year to something between 20 and 30% by 2025. It's a combination of the VW Dieselgate scandal, changing consumer preference, but also a lot of new policy that's driving growth in this category. There are different ways to invest in this growth story, and you can own Tesla. We don't. We can talk about that if you like. But we look for broad market exposure, critical components in the supply chain, good governance, decent valuation, and Umicore is a good example of them. So what they do is they make the materials that go into the cathode of the battery. So that's what determines the performance of the battery. It's a really critical component that they happen to dominate. So,
And presumably, obviously, the difference between investing in a company like that and investing in the car companies is car companies, they're a bit of a rollercoaster ride quite often, aren't they? But all of those car companies who are making electric cars are going to want the battery technology to keep getting better and better and better.
Exactly. So Umicore is supplying materials that are in the batteries that are going to go into whichever OEM ends up dominating the EV market. So it's that breadth of market exposure that we're interested in.
There was a company we were just talking about off air. You mentioned which we found a bit surprising, which was cotton. Might not be all that you expect, and you found a company that's trying to deal with that as well.
It's a company called Lensing, I think, I discovered when I was doing my research. And you said that cotton's actually really bad for the environment, which is something that both me and Richard said we didn't have the faintest idea about.
Yeah, no, I mean, cotton has a very adverse environmental footprint. It uses huge amounts of water. It's very destructive to soil quality as well. So there are real issues with it. And it only grows in quite a narrow kind of swathe of country around the world. So we need to find an alternative. And the alternative is what we call man-made cotton fibres. And that's what Lensing specialises in. There's a kind of rump of the business, a commodity part, which is viscose. But what they also really dominate is these higher performance fibres like modal, which goes into a lot of underwear and, you know, these kind of comfort clothes, and also Tencel, which is strong, breathable, goes into jeans, sportswear, all these kinds of areas. And that's a very high performing fibre that they really dominate as well. So high margins, high returns, strong market position. Very interesting. Yeah.
And one of the other things I was going to ask you about as well, which I guess leads in from that cotton element, is that there's a lot being spoken about at the moment about the impact of agriculture on the world and farming and intensive farming and it needing to make sure that it's being as environmentally friendly as possible, which presumably means generating more food from the same space or in a smarter way. And there was a company called Trimble that I see that you invest in that does something along those lines. So how does that work?
Yeah, so the food and agriculture is incredibly resource intensive. I think we were saying before that if in order to feed the world, we as it stands, we would need to produce 40% more food than we do today in the next 25 years. It's a huge greenhouse gas emitter. If food and ag were a country, it would be the third biggest emitter of greenhouse gas. It's responsible for 70% of water extraction. There are huge pollution issues related to insecticides, pesticides, all these kind of areas. So we've got to do a better job of it. You know, there's also huge wastage through the value chain. So all of this is a problem, but is an opportunity for the companies that are providing the solutions. So we're looking at the names who are improving the efficiency and reducing the environmental impact. So Lensing was one example, but Trimble is a classic example of this. So I'll get to it now. They're a software business, and it's all about facilitating a connected farm. So it's based around GPS, and it effectively allows a farmer to map out his field, check the moisture content, the nutrition levels at different parts of the field, and effectively create optimum growth conditions in that field. So he's getting his seed spacing right, the drilling depth right. He's using only the right amount of water, pesticide, fertilizer. So he's getting a big yield enhancement, so more revenues, and he's also getting less costs. So he's using less pesticide, and he's got less pollution that he has to deal with afterwards. So it's an exciting opportunity, yeah, that's what they do.
So finally, just before we run out of time, I guess my question would be, in terms of these businesses, when you look to the future for them, 5 years, 10 years out, and at some point within that 5 or 10 years, the stock market's that's been doing very, very well over, you know, the 10 years since the financial crisis, is going to take a tumble. Are these the kind of companies that will be affected by that, potentially considered more risky and affected more if the market takes a tumble? Or do they have a defensive element to them because you are investing in the future of what the world needs?
Yeah. Well, yeah, as I say, we've been doing this for a long time and we've learned quite a lot through that process. So we lived through the financial crisis managing funds in these markets. And so, you know, right now we have, you know, very well diversified portfolios across regions, across sectors. I think it's fair to characterize it as maybe a little bit more cyclical, economically sensitive compared to global equities, but not by much. So we've got a good balance of cyclical and defensive names as well. So, you know, we believe that the risk profile and the risk data suggests that the risk profile is slightly higher, but not wildly out of whack with global equities. We've had quite volatile markets already, and the funds have performed, you know, fairly well through that. So that's where we are.
John, that's all we've got time for. Thank you very much for joining us. Richard, thank you very much.
Thank you
for watching. Join us next time on The Investing Show. Goodbye.
The Investing Show, brought to you in association with the Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust. For more information, please visit www.scottishmortgageit.com.